I was 100% convinced that we would find Morgan and that she would come home and that I would someday look her in the eye and tell her that I had fought for her every day, that I had not quit. You know, hope is not a strategy. Hope is action. It's about doing something, that it is okay to keep fighting, that you're the force mm-hmm. who fights for your missing person. You're the one who's going to make sure that everybody else still fights for them. Yeah. It's okay to have hope.
Colleen Nick's daughter Morgan was 6 years old when she was taken from a Little League ballpark on June 9th, 1995. It was a moment that reshaped Colleen's life and ignited decades of advocacy.
Welcome to the Carti Hopecast, where we explore stories that shape us, journeys of resilience, hope, and perseverance. We seek the lessons that emerge when we face the unexpected and find strength in the struggle.
I'm Adam Head, and today I'm honored to welcome Colleen Nick, mother, advocate, founder of the Morgan Nick Foundation, and a nationally recognized voice for child safety education and family support. Colleen's journey began in a moment no parent can prepare for. Yet, she transformed her grief into purpose, building one of the most influential child advocacy organizations in the country. Her commitment to hope has shaped thousands of families' lives. Colleen, we appreciate you being with us today on the Hopecast.
Thank you very much.
Before we talk about the work that you're involved with today, it's absolutely appropriate to begin with Morgan, the reason for that. For those who may not know your family's story, would you share a little bit about Morgan, who she was as a child, what she loved, and what you remember most vividly about her?
You know, Morgan was 6 years old when she was kidnapped, and her dream to grow up was to be a circus performer and a doctor. So, you know, that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to be in the circus. She wanted to be a doctor. She hated to play outside because it made her sweat. She didn't like to touch bugs, and apples were her favorite food group. In the first grade, she signed up for track. And so when she brought her papers home and we filled them out and sent them back, they had their first track practice at school the next day. And she came home and she was so angry. And she said, "Do you know what they make you do in track?" And she said she had to go outside and run, and she was sweating. And so she quit. And she signed up for Girl Scouts because she said they could stay inside and glue stuff. You know, she was 6 years old. She was innocent and delightful and joyful, you know, all the things.
Well, there's a before and after, certainly, in your life that began on the night Morgan disappeared. Would you share a little of what that moment was like for you as a mother and those early days that followed?
So, you know, the night that Morgan was taken, we went to a field in Alma, Arkansas, a baseball field. We'd not been there before. It was 30 miles away from where we lived. This field was one block from the police station. You had to pass the police station to get to the field and to leave the field. And we went with our friends to watch their children play in this Little League baseball game. Morgan sat with me throughout the evening in the bleachers, and during the last 15 minutes of the game, the kids from the other family kept asking her to go play with them, and they wanted to go catch fireflies. And she really wanted to go catch fireflies. And against my better judgment, I finally told her that she could. And she kissed me on the cheek, and she climbed down from the bleachers, and she ran off with her friends to catch fireflies in the parking lot. You know, the game ended during those 15 minutes. I turned several times to see where the kids were, and they were running back and forth in front of the cars. But when the game ended, the team that we were watching came off the field to the right-hand side of the bleachers. And so they were cheering and shouting. There was just a lot of noise going on. And I was looking directly at the team, and I had my back to the parking area. So when I glanced back around real quick to see where Morgan was, I didn't see her. I saw the two children that she had been with. And they were walking back towards us, but she wasn't there. And so I met them as they came through the gate there at the fence. I met them and they said they didn't know where she was. She was taking sand out of her shoes. And I went to my car and looked around the car, even looked under the car at one point, thinking she has to be right here somewhere.
Yeah.
And she wasn't. And so the terror, when you can't find your child, it was just overwhelming, you know. The police were called. They were there within just a few minutes. And an incredible search began that night for Morgan. But the horror of not knowing where your child is and not being able to help her, not being able to rescue her, is something that I still live with today.
Clearly still feels fresh, even after all this time.
You know, 30 years has gone by since Morgan was taken. And, you know, we've done incredible advocacy out of that. But the grief can still just take me to my knees. The time and the distance has strengthened our family, and we can look at the legacy of what has been done. But we still miss more.
You've often said that hope is not naivety, but endurance. What did hope look like for you in the beginning, and how has its meaning changed over time?
You know, hope is not a strategy. Hope is action. It's about doing something. And for us in the beginning, hope looked like finding Morgan, doing absolutely everything we could, working with law enforcement, bringing in the newest, you know, technology,
absolutely,
anything that was available to fight for Morgan. That was our whole goal, was just to find Morgan and bring her home, whatever that took. And as time has gone on, you know, that has remained our focus. I was 100% convinced that we would find Morgan and that she would come home and that I would someday look her in the eye and tell her that I had fought for her every day, that I had not quit. And so that is where we focused our energy. But on focusing on the fight for Morgan, we began to encounter other families who had missing children. You know, before she was taken, I realized that somewhere out there, children went missing, but it was very much on the peripheral of my life. It was not something I ever really thought about. And after Morgan was taken, what we realized is that, you know, 2,000 children are reported missing every day in the United States. Family abductions, runaway, stranger abductions, 2,000 children are missing every day. And that's a something that we can't ignore. And so we just began to get involved on the advocacy side, meeting with other families, talking to them, you know, getting involved in advocacy work. And we started the Morgan Nick Foundation. And that came out of the need of such a tragedy that we wanted to do something that said Morgan's life had value. And so we started the Morgan Nick Foundation, and it has grown over the years to an organization that serves missing adults, missing children, walks alongside families, bridges those communication gaps with law enforcement so families feel seen and feel heard, and their loved one, their missing person, is getting the resources that they deserve.
Well, this work that you're doing that now extends beyond your own story, walking along families facing what's going to be the darkest moment of their lives. What have those families taught you over time about courage, the grief they're experiencing, and about human connection and the importance of that?
So when Morgan was first missing, Melissa Witt, I don't know if you're familiar with her story, but she was 19 years old and she became missing from a bowling alley in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And the search went on for her for 6 months, and eventually she was recovered deceased. And when Morgan was missing. I had this tremendous need to talk to someone who understood that. It was just, I can't explain that. I needed to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, law enforcement kept saying, you know, what can we do to help you? And I said, I want to talk to Marianne Witt. And I can't imagine now how overwhelming that was for her, but they got in touch with her and she came to the fire station. We were living in the fire station there in Alma. And she came to the fire station that day. And knowing that she had buried her daughter, that it had not ended well for her, mm-hmm. she sat across the table from me and she said, "You can't give up hope." And that was probably the single most important thing that anyone has ever said to me. And we try to carry that over to all families, that it is okay to have hope, that it is okay to keep fighting, that mm-hmm. you're the force mm-hmm. who fights for your missing person. You're the one who's going to make sure that everybody else still fights for them. Yeah. It's okay to have hope.
Well, in your educational work, you often talk about the practical layers of keeping kids safe. What are some broad principles or tools you believe every family should be aware of, those that have not gone through this kind of tragedy yet?
You know, we don't want people to go through this kind of tragedy, which is why we do the education. Mm-hmm. So our teachers from the foundation, we're in 96 schools across Arkansas this year, reaching 34,000, almost 35,000 students face-to-face with presentations talking about staying safe. And what I would share with parents is that parents are all, they're just always behind. They can't help it. Mm-hmm. The new apps come out, kids know about them. But communication with your kids is important. Talk to them about who their friends are. Talk to them about what they're doing online. Don't be afraid to sit down and talk to your kids about what grooming looks like online, about mm-hmm. what sextortion looks like mm-hmm. online, and educate. Parents need to educate themselves. And we think if we don't watch the videos, the educational videos, or read the articles, maybe it's not going to happen to us. It's mm-hmm. happening somewhere out there.
Yeah.
But it's happening in schools and homes across Arkansas every day. And so I think for parents to not be afraid to educate themselves and not be afraid to introduce it to their child, because I think we know that parents are afraid to bring the topics up because they don't want to tell their child something they don't know, but kids are already hearing it. Mm-hmm. It's being that guard out in front of your children and making sure they understand how to get help if something happens.
So as you've discussed the grief that's gone along in this tragedy, there are certainly different types of grief. And some, while deeply painful, come with a kind of more immediate finality. But when a child goes missing, there are no answers necessarily and not any immediate resolution, and sometimes never. How would you describe this particular kind of grief as you've navigated it the last 30 years?
You know, I think we often think of grief as something present and tangible that mm-hmm. we can touch. Right, that we have a way to make better somehow. But the a missing person who just remains missing mm-hmm. is just such wide open anguish for families to have to deal with. And you have to find ways to navigate that. For us, it looked like finding ways to teach my other children that there is joy to be had in life, right? That I wanted to raise them to know that the world is a good place, that even though something really bad and tragic happened to our family, that the world is a good place and that they don't have to be afraid and that they can be safe and that they can find joy. And, you know, that's what I hope other families also, because otherwise the person who committed the crime against your family, they win.
Yeah.
Right? If they steal everything else from you, they've already taken so much, and we were determined not to let that happen to our family.
Well, I can't imagine the toll that this has taken over time on you personally. How have you been able to care for your emotional and mental health along the way, especially when you're continuing to do this kind of work and with this kind of mission?
I mean, I have a deep faith in God. I always have had, and it's not something that I let go of when Morgan was taken. Someone told me, you know, it's okay to be mad at God. Just make sure that you tell him about it. Mm-hmm. Don't stop your communication. And so that is really something I've taken to heart.
Yeah.
You know, the other part is that in everything that we've done that's been advocacy for other people, the heart of all of that for us has always been searching for Morgan and fighting for her. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that enables me to get out of bed every day and keep fighting, that not wanting to quit, not ever wanting to have to look her in the eye and say it was too much or it was too hard. The day that Morgan was born, she was born in a German hospital, so nobody spoke English. We were in the military. We were mm-hmm. stationed in Germany, and the military hospital was full that night, so they couldn't admit us, and they sent us to a Krankenhaus, to a city hospital where no one spoke English. And we were there for 4 hours before she was born, and I remember when the doctor handed her to me for the first time, and I held her, mm-hmm. and I was just swept away by how much I loved her. And I knew then that I would do anything to fight for her, to make her life be okay. And so my decision wasn't made to fight for Morgan on June 9th. I made that decision on September 12th, 1988 at 4:44 a.m. Mm. And so that's what I've done, is just continued to fight for her.
If you could help people truly understand one thing about families who are left without answers, what would it be?
I think, you know, I would really just encourage friends to continue to love on that family, mm-hmm. to be okay talking about that missing person, to encourage them in their hope and their support to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. It never goes away for us. It's always present in our life, mm-hmm. right? So we're 30 years down the road, but every holiday we feel Morgan's absence. Mm-hmm. Every birthday we feel her absence. And it's okay to let that grief be part, to recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Well, after decades of advocacy, what continues to give you purpose? And this continues to give you hope as you live out this mission.
You know, I think one of the things that continues to give me hope is seeing the impact that we make on families. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're working with law enforcement and they sometimes rightly so, feel like they're not seen or heard, or, you know, maybe there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that they can't see. And that we're able to validate them and to encourage them, to give them hope to keep going forward and to communicate and to keep fighting for the missing person. When I see that we're doing that and that it changes people's lives, that they come out stronger mm-hmm. instead of destroyed on the yeah. other side, that's the goal.
Well, Colleen, can you tell us more about the Morgan Nick Foundation and how listeners can help or get connected?
I mean, so the primary focus at the foundation is to prevent abductions and prevent people from becoming missing. And we do that through education and then through intervention when someone does become missing. You can always go to our website if you want to donate or if you want to follow us. There's also a lot of free education for you to use with your children. We created during COVID, created a curriculum, since we couldn't go into the schools, that's housed at the Arkansas Department of Education, and it has lessons for every grade level talking about mm-hmm. those things you should be talking to your children about.
Well, Colleen, thank you for sharing your heart and your strength with us today. Before we close, what message would you offer to someone listening who's been living something that they never expected, and in that initial searching process?
You know, if someone is listening to this podcast and they've had a broken heart because they have a missing person, mm-hmm. what I would tell them is, you're not alone. You're not alone. There are people who understand your grief, mm-hmm. who understand the aloneness, who understand the anger. And we're here to stand with you.
Well, Colleen, Nick, thank you so much for telling your story. Absolutely.
Yeah, can I read this?
I would love for you to.
So this is a paper that Morgan wrote at the end of first grade. And I think it just so clearly shows who she was, right? And what her legacy is about. And it says, what I liked about first grade, I like projects. I like parties. I love videos. I love Miss Schaefer, who is her teacher. I do not like work. I do not like recess when we go out. I love it when we go in for videos. I like coloring. And she signed her name. And, you know, we talked about how 2,000 children are reported missing every day. And the world is cheated of who they would have become. You know, the circus performers and the doctors. Mm-hmm. And we can't afford to let that continue to happen. I mean, this is a crisis that shouldn't happen. We shouldn't lose children and not have their voices left. And the person who took Morgan, he took her from me. He took her from her dad and her brother and sister. But her voice outlived his life. It outshines his life. Her memory and the love that we have for her, Morgan's heart shines on. And I have a tattoo that says her heart shines on. Mm. And that's her legacy. Is that even though her voice was silenced, her heart shines on.